And ladies and gentlemen, we are live on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Thank you very much for tuning in. Before we begin, though, ladies and gentlemen, I do want you to give us a hand here. And by that, I mean, if you've got social media, if you've got Twitter, if you've got Snapchat or any of these other things that generally waste your time talking about things that don't really matter and basically wasting your time from your life away from your kids and things of that nature, please use it for just a moment at this point to share this particular link and YouTube with your audience. Trust me, ladies and gentlemen, it doesn't matter whether you're a father, a mother, or a son of a biatch. There is an audience that you have, ladies and gentlemen. There are people who listen to you, unless you're a crazy person who's a conspiracy theorist like me, in which case people just really don't want to listen because it makes you incredibly uncomfortable. Anyway, please share the link, ladies and gentlemen, so we can get the audience numbers a little bit up. And I want to say hi to everybody in the chat room. Thank you so much for tuning in already. I apologize for the late start of the show. I'm an idiot. Okay, now, we had some little bit of a problem with the audio there. Sorry, guys. There we go. We're sorted. Now, my very special guest today, ladies and gentlemen, is Lynette Zhang from ITM Trading. Lynette, welcome to the program.
Well, it's great to be here, Vincent. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Could you tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do?
Well, I've been with ITM since 2002, but I've been in these markets on a number of levels since, frankly, I was 10 years old. So, and I'm going to be 65 in October. I've been a banker, I've been a stockbroker, and definitely follow markets. I'm also an artist, so I can see patterns. And what I do is, or my mission really, is to translate financial noise into understandable language so that people can make educated choices that put their best interest first. What a concept. And here at ITM, everybody, you know, as a stockbroker, I started studying currencies in 1987. And I saw patterns in currency life cycles. And I developed a strategy before I even came here based on those repeatable patterns. And in 2002, I saw that we were entering the end phase of the current fiat money system or government-decreed system. And so everybody here is trained on the strategy that I created for myself, which is based on those repeatable patterns and valuations. And we try and help people not just survive, but certainly survive the reset that's already begun. This is not something that we're waiting for. It has already begun. And dare I say it, even thrive through it. So you actually come out the other side of this mess better than when you entered it.
So if you say that's already happening, what are the signs that fiat economy collapse is already, you know, happening?
Well, I would actually say a huge sign is the global yield curve inversions, where shorter term debt pays you more than longer term debt. So for example, here in the US, the overnight rate is higher than if you hold a bond for 10 years. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Right. So that is, you know, really, that is very telling that on a global basis, we're in deep doo-doo.
Why is that specifically that kind of interest rates and trading? What precedent has been set by that?
Well, first of all, that happens to be new for history, but we've been on a 30-year positive or bull market trend in bonds, which is debt, which is how money is created in the fiat system. And maybe to explain this better, we should back up for just a second, because I find that most people, even though we work for it and we use it all the time, people do not really understand the function of money. And it's critical that you understand that, because when gold became the primary monetary metal, what they were looking for was a way to value your labor fairly and to be able to hold that value into the future. And so though globally they've tried lots and lots of different things, only gold meets all of the criteria to be a good money. And when you're on a gold standard, because it takes labor and effort to pull the gold out of the ground, you're actually trading your labor for someone else's labor, which is a very fair way to do it. But the problem for governments was if they wanted to tax you, that was now visible. And you might not agree, and it's much easier if they get you to volunteer. So we shifted to the fiat money system, and fiat actually does literal translation as by decree. So that's government-based money. And where gold's most important function was to hold its value over time, the most important function of fiat money is to rob you of its value over time through inflation. But if it happens via inflation, you don't know it, so you're actually agreeing to work for less and less over time. So
essentially, it's a long-term scam. You know, hey, we want to kind of own everything, but we can't scam everybody really hardcore all at once. Let's just scam them a little bit and then a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And by the time they've lost absolutely everything, we've gotten everything under our own umbrella of corporate control, then we'll tell people, hey, we tried. Sorry, now you're slaves. We have to have a global government, and 74% of you are going to be exterminated ruthlessly by 5G and causing cancer. So, yeah, there you go. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That's been a nice show. All right, we'll see you again next time. I'm just kidding.
That's okay. I mean, you know, actually, in so many ways, you're right. And what that's called is actually, they do have a term for it. It's not my term. It's the government's term, and it's called perception management. Because it doesn't matter what is true. It matters what is perceived to be true. So when they look at, you know, consumer sentiment or inflation expectations, it really is manipulating the individuals into moving forward in the way that suits them, which is to keep all your wealth in the intangible fiat money system. Because, look, when these markets crash, what are you going to do? Who are you going to call? Who are you going to, bang on any door? And listen to, if you listen to them talk, change your apartment, change the world. Nobody wants to own anything anymore, especially if everything's on demand. Boy, you can just get it like that. The big piece that people are missing when they go, well, yeah, it's much easier. Hey, I'll call a Lyft or I'll call an Uber. I don't need to have a car. But what happens if then Lyft and Uber get to determine how much you're going to pay when you don't have an access to a car or access to a house or apartment, etc.? Whoever owns the stuff, we're going back to the feudal system where you just have a couple people at the top and they own everything and everybody else leases. And I'm thinking that is not the position that I want to be in, or I want my children or my grandchildren or my great-grandchildren to be in. I want them to be in the ownership position so that they get to have a choice and a voice.
Well, that's what's problematic about this society, is that if you have some kind of freedom, it's eventually somebody's going to try and take it off of you in one way or another, you know, that kind of thing. And that's the lesson of history here. And economic freedom, I think, is one of the most powerful. All right. So if you've got economic independence, your power as an individual is quite insurmountable by comparison to somebody who doesn't have economic independence. Much like health. If you don't have your health, your effectiveness is extremely reduced, you know, and that's essentially what they're trying to do here, is reduce the economic capacity of the average individual to virtually nothing, so that once the overlords decide that they're going to take our guns, they're going to enslave society, they're going to surveil us full time in real time and all of that kind of stuff, we won't have the money, the resources, or the ability to defend ourselves to stop them. And we still have those abilities at the moment, and that's why we've got to basically employ everything, as the founding fathers said. You've got to deploy, what was it, your family, your fortune, and your sacred honor to this fight, or you're not going to win. I said it on the show, I think it was maybe even a couple of weeks ago, when I was talking to Patrick Wood from Technocracy News. I said, unless you're willing to risk your life, you're not going to be victorious.
Yeah. Well, that and I love Patrick. I've had him on. He actually lives locally, so he's absolutely brilliant. He's been paying attention to these markets and the transition for many, 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 many years. But I will also say that's why I think it's important for you to become your own central banker. And what are the central bankers globally doing? They're accumulating as much gold as they can. And there's been a huge expansion of that. Why? Because gold is real money. I mean, it really is just that simple. And a rising gold price is an indication of a failing currency. So going back to that perception management piece, they have suppressed the price of gold for so long as they've been accumulating it at ridiculously bargain prices, and that gives us the opportunity to do the same thing. And silver, by the way, as well, not just gold. But those are both real money that have full utility across every single avenue of the economy on a global basis. Mm. And I can go anywhere. Well, let's see. Okay. I can go anywhere and convert this into any currency.
Mm. Now, one thing I wanted to know as well is what's your value on paper gold versus gold in your possession? Because as far as I know,
paper gold is garbage.
Yeah.
It's not gold. Digital gold is not gold. Physical, and if you look at the Bank for International Settlements, the BIS Money Flower, you will clearly see that the biggest area that is universally accepted and peer-to-peer is a commodity money, which is physical gold and physical silver. Digital or paper is a contract. That's all it is. And it's denominated in, depending upon where you are, but it's denominated in that fiat money. And when you convert it, you only can convert it into that one currency, which is fiat money. So it's garbage.
Well, that's another thing I wanted to actually remind people of, something that Gerald Salente told me. I asked him, so what's the percentage of real gold versus paper gold in the market? And he says it's close to 99% is just paper gold. It's just gold that doesn't exist, that they just sold you, you know.
Right. Well, a number of years ago, before I knew enough to capture screenshots, unfortunately, I came across a BIS table. And in there, it showed that for every one physical ounce of gold, there were 66,000 derivative ounces of gold. And that's not all the fake gold that's out there. That was just in this one little teeny area. Well, I'm thinking that that could certainly have an impact on the price of gold when they employ that. And it caught, if you go to the CME or you go to any of the groups that issues options, in the CME group in this country, a central bank can control 500 ounces of physical gold for $110. It's all leverage. You know, so big deal. And they don't, and if you're a central bank, are you earning that money? No, you're pushing a button. It's nothing.
One thing I also heard was that they were salting gold bars with tungsten. Tungsten's got the exact same weight chemically as gold is, and apparently they were getting tungsten bars and then sealing them around with gold and then pressing them and stuff like that. So,
I think tungsten comes close, but I don't think that it actually contains the same weight as real gold.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it comes close. So if you don't have the machine, you're probably not going to know. But there are definitely ways that you can determine is something real or not. But going through a certified dealer where everything is verified and then guaranteed to be what it is, I think that's your safest bet. I mean, I would not buy from somebody over the internet that I did not know and I could not verify. Because I've been in this a long time. I've seen some horror stories, for sure.
Well, the scammers out there. It sounds exactly like what my brother told me about drugs. He said, Vinny, don't buy drugs from people you don't know. And I was like, it's not entirely dissimilar from gold now, is it?
Well, That's a good question, but I think you kind of probably, well, actually, it's different than gold because drugs fog your brain and they're not good for you. Gold is really good for you because it protects you. Drugs don't. That fogs your brain.
Now, speaking of drugs, I was thinking about this. We're talking about new currencies, gold-backed currencies and things like that. And one thing that actually came up, we're part of the Legalized Cannabis Party here in New Zealand, was what about hemp as currency? You know, because if you look at the industrial uses of hemp, it's about 25,000 different products that we currently have in our everyday economy. That's everything you wake up with, have lunch with and go to bed with can be made by hemp, right? And because it's a substance that holds value and because a lot of people use cannabis as currency anyway, you know, I'll give you a 50 bag to do this or whatever, that kind of thing. What if we had a natural economy? Because it seems to follow those same rules that you talked about gold, because it takes labor to get it out of the ground and process it, that kind of thing. So what would your idea be about maybe a hemp currency?
Well, number one, anything physical is barterable. But the reason why gold has emerged and not like in Germany, when they were doing the hyperinflation in the 20s, they were going to back their currency with rye. So they used a lot of rye in baking and so it had a lot of value in Germany. But here's the problem with backing a full currency in any kind of foodstuff or anything like that. Number one, you're going to use it up, right? So if you smoke it or if you turn it into a tincture or however else you're going to use it, put it in brownies or whatever, you're actually using up what's backing that currency. So it has a shelf life and you're going to use it up. Gold is indestructible. Even if it's in any form, you can melt it down, you can put it into another form, but it doesn't go away. And so that's the difference. Do I think that people are going to need a lot of hemp? Yes, I think people are going to need a lot of hemp and, you know, even alcohol, you know, beer. That's really good to barter with is toilet paper. So after you eat the brownies, you might need the toilet paper. So anything physical or any talent that you possess is absolutely 100% barterable. But to back a currency, it has to be indestructible. And it also has to be divisible without a reduction in value, which is why they can't use diamonds, for example, you know, to back a currency or rare gems, because you cut it in half, it loses its value. Whereas with gold, it doesn't. It's divisible and it's fungible. So really 1 ounce of gold, you know, like a Canadian maple leaf 1 ounce versus a U.S. gold eagle, they're fungible. They have essentially, they're the same thing, regardless of the weight. So that's actually why hemp would work for barterability as you're getting through this piece, but to back a full currency, it wouldn't work.
So you reckon gold wouldn't work to Sorry. So you reckon hemp wouldn't work as a full currency, but it would work as good barter, you know, kind of
correct.
Like as sort of like as a hemp fiat currency, so degree.
And when we're going through it, that's what we need. We have to have, the problem is when currencies go into hyperinflation, if you're going to use that currency, there's no confidence in it that whoever you pass that currency on to is going to be able to use it. Therefore, they don't want it. If you go to the grocery store and you buy this pint of strawberries for whatever, they know that they're not going to be able to replace those strawberries for the same amount as they received from you. So in that case, hemp would most likely work as a perfect tool of barter. But it's destructible. That's the problem with it. And everything else. That's one reason why gold, they've tried thousands of things.
What I was thinking as well is how do you actually expand and contract the economy without a disposable currency kind of thing? Well, if I may, like the I followed this fantasy game called 40K, and in it there's these creatures called orcs, and they run their economies through teeth, all right? They use teeth as currency because they recycle their teeth all the time, just kind of like sharks, and the teeth corrode so that nobody would ever be able to hoard them. And that's what cash flow is about. The currency must flow. That's why it's called a current, see? Yeah? So I was wondering, how does gold get affected by that? Because it can't corrode, and no more of it's being discovered or anything like that.
Well, yeah, it does not corrode, but the way that you would do it is adjust the number of dollars to the ounce. So, for example, and this is actually been done several times, where they revalue, and that's what we've got. We've got a bigger reset coming up, but they revalue the ounce of gold in relation to the number of fiat dollars. So originally, when they first started the transition from a gold standard to a fiat standard, an ounce of gold was $20. But then what they did is they allowed the central bank to print 2.5 times the amount of paper to that same amount of gold. So, and that wasn't the only time that they did that, but essentially, that's how you do that. The value of the paper declines, but the value of the gold is maintained in terms of purchasing power.
Can I explain with a quick example for the audience there? Back in the day in Rome, 1 ounce of gold would get you a suit of armor. All right. Nowadays, the cost of a proper suit, a real business suit and stuff like that, costs about the same as 1 ounce of gold does.
Voila. So what changed? It's just the numbers, right? Gold doesn't change. It's the number of you have dollars too. So it's the number of dollars that it takes to buy it. So for a current example, according to my data, if they were to do the reset today, the minimum level, and it's actually much higher than this, but the minimum level that you would see spot gold go to is $10,000 or more dollars if they did the reset today. Now, right now, you've got spot at somewhere a little bit north of 1,500. It broke a key level intraday, but that's another story. So, yeah, it's a bargain. If you knew 100% that something was worth $10,000 and you could buy it for $1,500 or $2,000 or $3,000 or $5,000 or $7,000, wouldn't you do it?
So basically, this is the best time to invest in gold, but your investment's not going to pay off until the economy collapses, is it?
It shouldn't, because this is not a trade. So even though I know people are excited because we've got gold running right now, it's at the highest level as it was in 2013, but you just want to accumulate, just like the central bankers and the one percenters. You just accumulate, and then when they do the reset, first of all, you've got, as example, you've got property prices right now severely overvalued to their true value because they've been reflated thanks to all the central bank money printing, and you have gold sitting way undervalued. As this trend unfolds, what you're going to see is that the prices go down like this. And then when they do the reset, you've got it up here. Now you take the gold and you add a high and you convert it into those income producing assets when they're severely undervalued. And you do it when you know that the smartest guys in the room on any given topic, I always say this, you don't have to know everything, but if you know how to see what they are doing for themselves and you can emulate them, rock and roll, hoochie coo, that's what you should be doing. So you take your gains here, put it into those income producing assets that are undervalued. And that's why I said, you know, you'll be better off on the other side of this mess. But it's not a short-term trade. I don't care how high it goes right now. You know, goes up 20. It's gone up, about $120 or something like that over the past couple of weeks. I'm not selling my gold because in terms of fiat, it went up. No. Mm.
Well, it's funny because I was just thinking about this, how what are the big smartest men in the room doing with their money? And part of it is bribery. All right, bribing elected officials. Yeah. All right, and allegedly, for every $30 million that you invest in bribing elected officials, you get close to $1 billion in revenue. So that's like the marketing budget.
There you go. Absolutely. Whereas,
So, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to invest in bribing your elected officials, okay? And seriously, just give them money and say, what I want you to do is not betray the Constitution. What I want you to do is to kick out the globalists. What I want you to do is to stop 5G. Here's $1 million. Sign a contract. Okay, that's good. And then you make $1 billion in proceeds afterwards. Not you making the $1 billion on the other hand, but $1 billion that would have gone into the hands of corrupt scumbags doesn't, and instead remains in the hands of the people because you invested $30 million in bribing people to do the right thing. How ironic.
Well, and part of that is, you know, what you're talking about is watching what the smartest guys in the room are doing for themselves. So, and then if you can emulate it, which is why I personally prefer the collectible gold coins over the bullion gold coins, because the data shows me that the one percenters, those guys that can afford $1 million for an ounce of gold, that's what they're buying. So that's what I'm buying, because they either bribe, all right, they either create the laws or they most likely have influence over those that create those laws. So that's how I know. I just look at the data, I can see the charts, and that's where they're putting their money. Okay, that's where I want mine. It's easy. Not paper gold and not even bullion gold, because I personally think there will be an overt confiscation, since there's been a covert confiscation of your wealth since the day you were born.
Yeah, so that's another thing as well that somebody was telling me, is that it doesn't matter if you've got real gold in your possession, which is like basically the ideal, because eventually the government's just going to come and take it, that kind of thing. I think that happened even during the 60s under JFK, actually. He passed this reform bill that allowed U.S. citizens to trade in their silver for fiat-backed currency kind of thing, and then came and forcibly took it.
Yeah, and then President Johnson actually signed that bill into law and actually came out and verbally said, and if you try to hoard silver, we will crush the market. Those weren't exactly the words, but, you know, anybody can Google that and see. But at the same time, what JFK also did was he gave the foreign gold coins a similar exempt status to the pre-33 coins. And, you know, and everybody should understand, because a lot of people go, oh, those collectible coins. Well, look, my uncle was a major antique dealer, and I was 10 years old, and my parents and I were in his back bedroom, and he said to my parents, you know, Aunt Bertie will not have to worry. If anything happens to me, Aunt Bertie will be well taken care of for the rest of her life because of this. And he had two huge floor safes, and they were stacked with gold. And if I was 10. So, I mean, how much, it obviously made an impression on me. But if I had to guess, knowing what a monster box looks like, I would say that he probably had, you know, at least 3,000 gold coins at a time when it was illegal to hold more than five. And he was holding it legally because he met the requirements to have that exempt. That's huge for me. That I, you know, I've been groomed for this moment in time. I didn't really think too much about it. I mean, I certainly turned around to look, but, you know, who had the concept when you were 10? But I want the kind of gold that I can buy that piece of property with legally. Because I'm not saying there won't be a black market. Of course there will be. There always is. But, and this will vary from where you are. Like in India, when they demonetized their currency in 2016, they went door to door confiscating gold. But India has lived through so many currency devaluations that they hold their wealth in that way. In places like the U.S., and I'm, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't know enough about the accumulation patterns in New Zealand, but I mean, I don't think even 1% of the population owns any gold. So, you know, I don't know if they're going to do an overt confiscation or not. But if I can say, what if I'm right and what if I'm wrong? And if it doesn't matter either way, whether I'm right or wrong, then that's the choice I'm going to make. Because then I can sleep well at night and I don't have to worry about it.
That's right. And also for currency collapse and things like that, if you don't have any currency or you don't have any gold or anything like that, drugs, ladies and gentlemen, cigarettes, alcohol, these kind of things go up hugely in a bad market and what have you. So, you know, I was talking with a couple of Irish guys a couple of years ago on their show, and we were like, man, we need to start accumulating a huge quantities of ciggies and bottles of whiskey and scotch and things like that. Enormous, just cascades of it. Because then when the economy collapses, you'll be sitting pretty because everybody will want to be your friend and they'll all be willing to give up their essential supplies in order to get drunk.
Probably so. However, the advantage of gold and silver is that it's universal.
Yeah.
You know, so.
But it's not addictive. It's not addictive, is the thing. So if you've got something that's addictive, you know somebody's going to buy it and for any price. So that's the trade-off there. Yeah. I'm such a scumbag.
I kind of personally, you know, if you came to me with drugs or alcohol, I probably would not be changing anything because I don't typically go in that direction. I'm more about good, healthy food. So I have an urban farm and I have eggs that I can barter with. I kind of like that a little better. Toilet paper is another big one, actually.
Toilet paper is what people forget, and they also forget the most important tool in the survival toolbox, your brain, okay? Yeah. If you're still thinking, you might survive. If you're not thinking, if you're just panicking, and if you're just going, oh, somebody right. save me, somebody believe me, somebody deliver food to the Super Bowl dome or something like that when you're stuck in New Orleans, you're going to die, all right? Right? There's a good chance.
That's where community comes in.
Mm.
Right? People coming together with a variety of skill sets. I mean, I'm an urban farmer. I share with my neighbors the food. And, you know, if I had to, I could go and irrigate somebody's gardens. Not that I would want to, mind you. But I have that skill set that I've learned. And if you've got good food that you're eating, that keeps your brain clear, and you've got a nice community that's coming together, you have a shot of surviving it. And then with the gold and the silver is really for me, it's about day-to-day barterability, and it's just more universal. I mean, that's why gold and silver evolved. It's universal. Even in that Bank of International Settlements monetary money flower, okay, it is. It's universal and it's peer-to-peer and it's invisible. It's outside of their ability to control. Admittedly so.
Well, that's good. It's actually outside of control mechanisms as well, because the other concept as well is behind strong communities and things like that. I recall back on the hemp subject just a little for a second here. Back in Australia, there was a drought, I believe, in northern Darwin that lasted a long period of time, and that particular community lasted through it with hemp seeds, things like that. It's got omega 3, 6, 9. It's got endocannabinoid receptors in your body, so it can repair any damaged cell growth and things like that. So when things are bad, if you've got plenty of hemp on you, that kind of thing, you've basically got anything covered. Oh, you need some new clothing? Hemp. Oh, you need some new building materials for a new house? You've got a bit? Hemp. Oh, you need some fuel for your car? Hemp. You need to actually build a car from scratch with new panels? Hemp. Oh, you need to have something to feed your animals or your livestock or give them a bed or anything? Hemp. Any freaking thing you could basically name can be done from hemp, including now even batteries. Right. So I was just thinking, whoa. No wonder it's either illegal or so hard to grow with huge amounts of red tape that it might as well be illegal. Because you think about how many industries don't like competition that are owned by globalist scumbags, socialists. And you're like, okay. So this is the one thing that could actually free the world in terms of resources acquisition, because you can't, you know, satisfy your nutritional needs on gold, but you can on hemp, that kind of thing. So gold, hemp economy. All right. Just thinking
there
about
it. And throw some moringa in there, because you can live on moringa. Yeah. And that too has like full utility, the twigs, the sticks, the leaves, the roots, full utility. And it's really, really good. It's one of the most nutritious foods on the planet. Grows really easy in warm climates. So if you live in a cold climate, you need to be able to bring it in and protect it. But in warm climates, I mean, you could live off of that if you needed to.
Yeah, that's right. And all of these things that you need to know. Basically, what did I see? A great meme the other day. The best thing that you can do to resist a totalitarian government is growing your own food. The best and simplest thing. Principally because I think at the moment now, the government and corporations don't seem to actually be all that different. I think they're actually got the same shareholders to a large degree. Yes. So that means they control your food supply, they control your money supply, they control your everything supply. So
the more you can
supply yourself, the better.
And you know which ones control the food supply? There's six of them, and they're all drug companies.
Yeah.
Shocker!
Mm. Well, as Hippocrates once said in ancient Greece, let food be thy medicine and let medicine be thy food, which is why the pharmaceutical companies took over all the medical institutions and stopped teaching them nutrition, because then you can sell them drugs instead of them not getting sick in the first place and needing to come to you for drugs. Okay.
Exactly.
Things are so much simpler when you're really cynical and jaded, you know. It was something that I learned an activist friend of mine who's a journalist. She said, you know, Vinny, if you're jaded and cynical, that's a sign of an experienced journalist.
Well, I still like to hold hope, because I feel like, you know, if there are 3% of the population that can understand what we're trying to show them, then we actually have the opportunity to have choice on the other side of this mess. You know, right now, we don't have any choice. We were born into it. We've been taught and fed a lie, but that lie is now starting to unravel. And they're going to have to shift us into something else. And if we don't pay attention, and if we're not like right on their, you know, making sure that we have that choice, what they have in mind for us, it's not going to be very pleasant. And I want to have a choice. And it's not me, because, hey, I'm in the last third of my life. But I have daughters. I have grandchildren. And, you know, I mean, I don't want them to be in a slavery situation. And that's where they're taking us.
Mm.
Everything's surveillance. Everything, all titles held on, you know, on digital money. And that way, boom, they don't want you in your house. Boom, you're locked out of your house. It's gone. What are you going to do?
Mm.
So, yeah, no.
Yeah, and the last stage before that's going to happen, of course, is just gun confiscation. The old saying goes that, what was it? You can vote in socialism, but you have to shoot it out. that's the real problem with it as well. Oh, it sounds so nice, like they're not going to exterminate me. Oh, damn, I was wrong. It's too late. And that's what's problematic now, is like even right-wing candidates have socialist policies, and I'm like, okay, this is how they've controlled both sides of the house.
Yeah, well, it isn't. There's really no different. The political is a sideshow. And I know in this country, a lot of them that are coming in are talking about modern money theory, where they just print money and they can pay for whatever they want. The problem is the value that money holds.
Mm.
Right? They don't have to create debt. We just print the money and pay for all these programs. Everybody will just give them all money so they can just spend. That's coming. They're going to do that probably in the not too distant future. In the evolution of where we are in this trend cycle. And hey, people think there's such a thing as a free lunch, so they're probably going to get voted in. But the truth is, there is no such thing as a free lunch. And when something looks like it's free, look at what's happening at Facebook, right? When they say that it's free, you got to dig a little deeper and see what those costs are, because it's going to cost you dear. The fees that you don't know you're paying are always worse than the fees that you know that you're paying. Always.
Yeah. I remember an American activist, he was talking on this documentary about police violence and stuff like that on citizens, and his city council A poor city council, by the way, in a very small town, was debating whether or not to get themselves a $250,000 police armored vehicle. All right. And this activist said, you know, the government's going to give you that to you for free. Okay. But there is always free cheese in a mousetrap.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And this exactly. is something how do you catch can't be scanned. You for the story of how you catch a wild boar? You go out there, wherever they like to hang out, and you put some food there. And they're a little nervous, but after a while, nobody's coming around the food, they start eating the food. And after about a week, you put a fence up, just one side of the fence, and you leave the food. And at first they're spooked because that's something different, but nothing happens. They start eating the food. Another week, once they're used to that, you put up another side, and you do that until finally you've got three sides. They're in the pen eating the food, and then you just put up that fourth wall, done. And they volunteered. You didn't have to go out and hunt them. They volunteered.
Mm-hmm. And then, ladies and gentlemen, they get slaughtered. All right. Yes. So what's the leading cause of death? The leading cause of death in the 20th century, ladies and gentlemen, unnatural death, let's specify, democide. What's democide, Vinny? Well, that's when you get fucking exterminated by your democratically elected leaders, all right?
You're funny.
I mean, it serves you right, doesn't it? It's like, oh, I'm going to pray for somebody to save me. He's telling me everything I want to hear. I'll just turn off my brain for like 4 years or something like that and not pay any attention. You know, but bro, okay, here's the thing.
But then what's the other alternative as well? I mean, I think we have to be way more independent and way more self-sufficient, because then you have the opposite side of the spectrum with China, with full surveillance. And really, their government is being tested right now in Hong Kong. And I'll tell you something that's really interesting. I went to France a couple of months ago, and one of the people that was driving me was originally part of the Yellow Vest movement in France. And what happened was, initially in the Yellow Vest movement, and this is typical of a lot of movements, is that you'll have a broad participation from the population, and then the radical factors start to take over, and so then the regular population backs away. That's what happened with the Yellow Vest in France. But the opposite is happening in Hong Kong, where you just had some radical factions that, and along with others that started it, but now you have more and more of the general mom and pop population participating in it. And that makes it way, way, way more dangerous. And how is China going to deal with this? God forbid, poi, poi, poi. But do you think we're going to have another Tiananmen Square? I mean, I don't know. That scares me.
Yeah, it's certainly within the realms of possibility, all right? And as the saying in China goes, first you fall on gong, and then you fall on gone, all right? Now, the thing is, if you're a political dissident in mainland China, where do you go? It just disappears, yeah. Right? And they don't have that kind of control mechanism and all the social credit system deployed in Hong Kong yet.
Yes.
When they do all of these little riots and things like that. You ever heard of a riot in China in recent history? In the last maybe 20, 30? No? Why not?
Because everybody who would leave.
Yeah, exactly. All right. That's the last time there was ever a protest of any kind in China. Now, I actually met a guy who lived in China at that time, and he told me a couple of interesting things. First of all, it was apparently about, reported in the media, approximately 100,000 people who got exterminated in that square. He said it was closer to 5 million, all right? Because what happened was, after they killed all the people in the square, the Chinese government went round everybody's house within the surrounding area and killed one person from each household and said, hey, if you say anything to anybody about what really happened here, we'll come and we'll kill the rest of your family. And so the death toll rose massively after Tiananmen Square, not because of the Tiananmen Square massacre, but because of the Tiananmen Square cover-up, because the Chinese government didn't want the rest of the Chinese citizens to know that they were slaves and that they would be exterminated if they did anything about it, because then they would have revolted.
Well, and that's, yeah, so that makes what's happening in Hong Kong right now a lot more dangerous on a number of different levels.
Yeah, it's a frightening thing. It is. And we deal with these realities every day. You know, if you're an activist and you care about things that matter, and you're not just obsessed with social media and that kind of thing, you have this thing called a conscience. Now, people don't know what a conscience really is. It's from the Latin con, meaning together. You know how chili con carne is chili with beef. Science is to know. Okay, so conscience, con science, is what we all together know to be true. We all know what right is. We all know what wrong is. And I think that for a long period of time, maybe the entirety of human history, certain individuals without a conscience have figured out how to turn entire populations that have one into entire populations without one, so that they can justify anything that they do.
Exactly. And really, that whole methodology is that perception management. We're going to craft how people perceive things. Then they move forward. That supports our goals.
Yeah, absolutely right. Now, I sense that maybe we're getting a little bit tired here and that kind of thing. Do you want to take a wee break, or we can round it up in about 15 minutes? Because normally my shows go for about 2 hours.
I can go forever. I'm like a little energizer bunny. No problem.
Okay, that's good. What's the topics that don't normally come up in your shows that you wish you could talk about, but maybe they're a little bit too scary?
Well, there was only one that came up that Eric and I both looked at each other after I had done the work, and we went, no, I don't think we'll do that. And I actually sent it to Sean at SGT. I don't know if he did anything with it or not. So you want me to, I probably don't want to talk about it here either. I'm sorry.
Oh, that bad, huh?
Yeah, it really, I mean, when I stumbled across it, it really freaked me out, which is why I put a whole piece together on it. But yeah, I'm sorry. I don't think I want to bring it up. I feel like I already have a big enough target on my back. These are people I don't really want to piss off. I have too much more work to do.
And in fact, that's something that I thought about just the other day, actually. It's like, what do you say, Vinny, and what do you do, Vinny, that doesn't get you exterminated immediately? You know, like that's the thing that I'm trying to work out here. But then again, the question is, if I'm not a target, am I really that much of a threat? All right. How covert am I doing this? Do they not know about me? That kind of thing. And I thought to myself, wait a second, I'm not actually that much of a threat. You know, and I was like, maybe that's not actually necessarily such a bad thing, because the point of the show, and it's usually kowtowed by the audience are intelligent, compassionate, and they've got a sense of humor, right? And I think those are the three things that we really need to maintain if we want to retain any goodness in this world. And that's basically what the show is about, is trying to maintain and get goodness out there so that people actually have a good example of it. You know, as opposed to the example of a father figure back from Dick Van Dyke days, where it was a strong male role model, you know, who took care of his kids and was responsible and everything like that. Now to the Homer Simpson and Peter Griffin days, where they're fat, they're stupid, they're lazy, and they don't care anything. You need to provide good examples for people. Otherwise, they don't know how to improve. This is what I was thinking about yesterday, is like, I have to be an example to other people, because if I'm not, children will look at me and emulate my behavior. And I think the same goes for all adults and all people in any position of influence. Whatever you're doing publicly or even privately, children will see it and emulate it. That's your responsibility.
Or you will, they'll either do that, or what they'll do is they won't believe you. And it's a function of integrity, because my father and he was the best man in the world. So I don't want anybody to misconstrue what I'm about to say, because I think this was all part of my grooming anyway. You know, he always used to say to me, do what I say and not what I do. And I always used to say to him, Daddy, that does not make any sense to me. And I'll never forget the day that it really kind of clicked in for me, because I have twins. And they were a year and a half old, and they were playing with this mirror between their two cribs in their room. And I went in there and I went, rip, 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 rip. And I heard myself, And what I realized is I could tell them all of these wonderful things. And well, that wasn't really, that wasn't really the story. But I would hear myself telling them, you're wonderful, you're powerful, you're this, you're that, you're the other thing. And then I looked at myself and I saw that I was not living my words. I was not living my integrity. And honestly, from there forward, he said, no matter what, no matter how hard it is, I have to live my words. I have to. So I've had viewers that have come to the farm. So because my mantra is food, water, energy, security, shelter, community, barterability, and wealth preservation. And I think that you lead by example. So I can't tell you to do something that I'm not doing myself.
Mm. Well, the definition of integrity is to be honest and behave with a moral conscience at all times. All times. All right.
What happens to a? Not just when it's easy.
Yeah. I mean, what happens to a ship when it loses hull integrity, ladies and gentlemen? It sinks to the bottom. Okay. And I think the same thing is happening to our society. We've essentially lost the capacity for integrity. I remember one of my mum's friends, Gary, he was sipping a bottle of whiskey and getting into his car, and he turns to us and he says, "Don't drink and drive."
Exactly my point, right? So I think that when we're on YouTube or any of the social media, in my opinion, we have an obligation to live inside of integrity. Don't be telling your viewers one thing if you are not living those words.
That's absolutely right. I guess, ladies and gentlemen, I have some growing up to do, and I think we all do to a large degree, you know.
Yes, we do.
Like, for example, I was just starting to curb my social media use recently, okay? And as a result, I missed very important messages from people who only messaged me on social media. It's like, that's quite funny, isn't it? How there's this ancient tale of this Roman emperor, and he apparently heard stories of this book that could tell the future, and he spent many, many wagons of gold and cost the lives of many, many men in order to find this book. But find it they did, and they brought it back to Rome. When he looked upon the book, on the other thing, the most frightening thing happened. It foretold of a grain shortage, that the grain would rot and be destroyed, and that the people of the city would starve. So he immediately leapt into action, and he told everybody, I'm going to confiscate all your grain, and I'm going to put it in a grand central granary that's going to be guarded around the clock, and everybody's going to be safe. We're going to avoid this crisis. And he did. And unfortunately, this giant granary wasn't built properly, and some water got in, and it made all the grain rot. Now, the moral of the story is there. Sometimes the steps that you take to prevent a future you don't want are the only steps you need to take in order to bring that future about. And so a lot of people in this world are not learning that lesson, that they're trying to avoid things, and unfortunately they need to rush straight towards them. That's what bravery is.
Yeah.
What made you stop being a banker and a trader and start doing ITM publishing and all of that?
Well, because this was my path. I mean, I stopped being a banker because I became a single mother, and the banking just didn't pay me enough. And I became a stockbroker because that did pay me enough. And the beauty part of all of it is the understanding of how these areas work and what the language is, because they intentionally make things confusing. But my studies in currencies, I mean, it was pretty obvious to me that we were starting the end game. I did not think I would see it in my lifetime. In fact, I was planning on retiring. I had a very nice retirement planned, but I did indeed see it in my lifetime. So that's why I knew that this is where I had to be. If I were still a stockbroker, and when I was a stockbroker, I always recommended a certain percentage of their portfolio in physical gold and silver. But, you know, this is where I needed to be to actually be of benefit. And that's what I always try and bring value to the table, but this is where I needed to be to get to do the next part of my job. And now I don't see retirement in my future, frankly, at all. But that's okay, because this is definitely what I was put on this earth to do, no doubt.
Well, meaning and purpose is something everybody needs in life, and apparently a lot of people who retire lose that, and they die a lot sooner. It's the people who've got something to live for, people who've got grandkids and things like that that they spend time with all the time. They have reasons to live, and they live a lot longer. One of my listeners, he was in Trinidad and Tobago, and his mother lived there as well, and she was 97 at the time. She smoked a... She smoked a pack of cigarettes a day and half a bottle of scotch every day. And I said to her, wow, that's amazing. By chance, does she have a whole bunch of old friends that she's sitting around a table and they're all drinking and smoking and laughing together? And he goes, yeah. And I go, that's why she's still alive. All right. See, it's that friendship. It's that fun kind of thing. That's what gives your body life, essentially. And if it's been taken away, you're not alive anymore. You're just living, you know?
Yeah. I probably wouldn't have sat on my rocker anyway, because it's not who I am as a person. But you're absolutely right. I mean, I'm on a mission, and my mission is to be of service. And, you know, I'm not a particularly religious person, honestly, but I definitely am very spiritual, and I definitely do believe in God. And I'm here to fulfill that. And when I look at all my training right along, I mean, there you go. 10 years old, I learned how, you know, from my uncle, it wasn't just about the gold. He was a major antique dealer, and he taught me all about how trends work, how tangible trends work, you know, and then you put the banking on top of that so that you understand how the fractional reserve system works and how debt works and all of that. And then you put on there being a stockbroker and looking at options and futures and all of these kinds of things and how stock markets move. I was there in 89 on Black Monday. I know what that looks like. This is such a manipulated market. This is not, there's no good price discovery in this, because we've just watched the erosion of the systems as the debt levels have boomed, because that's what creates money in this system. And so now debtors are way more. And how about negative rates? I mean, come on. We haven't even talked about that. And yet.
I don't even know what that is. Negative rates.
Well, that's where you're actually paying somebody to borrow money from you. I'm going to work my butt off. I'm going to save as much as I can, because, you know, the average wage never keeps pace with inflation. And then I've got this money here, and I'm going to loan it to you, and I'm going to pay you to borrow it from me, even though I know I'm not going to get it back because your credit rating is really crappy and you have a history of lots of defaults.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, two things really sprung to mind there. And first is an old Greek saying, is that your job in life is to plant a tree whose shade you know you shall never get to sit beneath. Okay. It reminds me of something that some Maori elders told me, is that we're not doing our activism for ourselves or our children or even our grandchildren. We're doing it for the children that haven't even been born yet, who can't even contribute to this fight. And I thought that long-term view is absolutely essential. And the second point on that is moral obligation. If you can do good and you have a situation where you actually have the ability to do it, you have a moral obligation to do it.
Yeah. I mean, so many times I've had people say, but why you? Well, if not me, who? And if not now, when? You know, I have been, you know, being an artist, and I'm an artist in everything that I do, but I have this ability to see things that most people think, well, this is over here and that's over there, and they're completely not connected. But I see how they come together. I see how they fit. You know, I have to share what I see. You can do whatever you want with it. I'm not going to be insulted if you disagree with me, but I'm going to share with you what I see. And then however that can benefit you, I'm good. I'm good. Then I've done my job. But yeah, that is, I feel a huge obligation and responsibility, because I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing for as many people as I can do it for.
Yeah. And I found that when I started doing that, and almost everybody who comes on the show has come to that same lesson on their own in some way, shape or form. Okay, I've got a moral obligation. I don't have a choice. I have to do it. And as a result, the universe stops working the way it used to and starts working a completely different way. Now, the way it used to work is, oh, I want this, I want that, and it doesn't give it to you. And what you do now is you go, this is what I think would be best for me. This is what I think would be best for the world, and the universe just gives it to you if you keep doing what you're doing, if you keep being who you're supposed to be, and if you keep having faith, that kind of thing. These things manifest into reality almost by magic, you know, exactly what you need, when you need it, in the quantity that you require, will come at exactly the time you want it, ladies and gentlemen.
Well,
that is what happens.
Maybe not the time that you want it, but certainly the time that you need it.
Need it, yes, yeah, sorry.
Right?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
Everybody wants it. And, you know, and I will say in my youth, I was probably a bit arrogant in assuming what the intention was for me. And I think that we all do that. But when you get knocked on your butt a few times, then you start to realize that, you know, and anybody with any age also knows this, that out of your biggest challenges, the things that are hardest, that really test who you are and your soul right down, that's where your biggest gifts and understanding actually come from.
Yeah. My saying is that the most valuable lessons in your life will be those that cost you the most.
Yes, I would agree with that 5 bazillion percent.
Now, speaking of which, I keep forgetting to do this. You know, this is my livelihood, and I keep forgetting about it because the universe sort of takes care of me. So, ladies and gentlemen, bear in mind, I have been demonetized. All right, so I'm not sure if you know what that means, but it means about 30% of my income gone. All right. Now, I've reapplied for monetization, and maybe the tomorrow or something like that is the deadline to get back to me. They say, oh, you want to be remonetized? Huh? Oh, okay, here's the little requirements. This is how much you've filled. Well, I guess you qualify, but we're just going to leave you hanging in limbo for as long as humanly freaking possible. All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you can support the show in any way, shape or form, that is absolutely what is required right now of you. Now, when I say this, I'm not meaning that, you know, me being demonetized is your fault. I'm not saying you owe me anything. All I'm saying is I'm in trouble because YouTube demonetized me. And if there is anything you can do to help me in any way, shape or form, please do it. Just because you can. Not because you have to. All right. So go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question. And Eastwood, like, go ahead, make my news. And on there is PayPal, Patreon, and Kiwi Bank options available if you happen to be a New Zealander. Now, the New Zealand listeners, a lot of them start up automatic payments of, say, $5 a week, $5 a month, $200 a month, whatever it is that you can afford. Okay, it's unique to every individual, what they want to give, what they can give. Find out the balance for yourself. I ask for nothing that I don't think that I deserve, ladies and gentlemen. 10 years we've been doing this show. 10 years we've been bringing on activists around the world who can tell you things and teach you things that nobody in your life can teach you. That's why I feel that I have become such a much better man, because I've been speaking to better people than myself. And if you're listening to it, those abilities are granted you as well for free. If you think that that's a valuable service, please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and donate something if you can. Now, Lynette, I wanted to also get your perspective on this recent Epstein case and the pedophilia and all of that kind of thing. This isn't obviously your area of expertise, but
no, it is not really, but I've been following the case. So go ahead.
Okay, so the question is there, I mean, let's say he's been either suicided, all right, by his people who've got all the money and control and power and stuff like that, which is what I assumed would happen. Either that, or he actually really did commit suicide, which I find, you know, hard to believe. Psych- pimps don't commit suicide, as the saying goes. And the last aspect of it is, how is this affecting American consciousness? And the reason I say that is because whenever there are these big breaking news items, there's a mass shooting or a pedophile commits suicide or something like that, the entire country abandons whatever they were doing and just kind of like focuses on this for a little bit. I'm wondering how it's affected you in that sense.
Well, you know, in all of my studies, there are, I'm going to deviate just a little bit, but this is really answering this question, that there are things that surround the financial system resets, like in 71. And that's typically, and it are things that are will distract you from what's really happening. So, you know, in 71, you had war, you had the civil rights movement, you had the women's movement, you know, the oil embargo, et cetera. And I would put the what happened with Epstein in that same kind of category, because we've had a rise in the women's movement and the Me Too movement, and the fact that he was definitely a pedophile, but also took advantage of women. I think that all kind of flows in as a distraction for the monetary regime shift that we're in the process of.
Whoa. So what do you mean? What kind of monetary regime shift is going on?
Well, that's the reset. The we're at the very end of this fiat money experiment. You know, so we've got to change into a new financial regime. That's going to be much worse. That's what my work is really all about, is helping people see it coming so that they can put themselves in the best position possible to survive what we're going through, and like I said earlier, to actually thrive through it so that they're better off on the other side. If you don't see the regime shift happening, and therefore you don't prepare, and you leave all your money, your wealth vulnerable to the powers that be, while they're getting out and they're getting themselves in a position to buy up those assets, the regime shift is going to change. It's going to happen. I mean, there's nothing anybody can do about it, and it has to happen. The system is so disgusting, so corrupt, so vile, so evil that we have to shift. The question is, what are we going to shift into? And my work is about us having a say in what that looks like. Because if we don't have a say in what that looks like, I can guarantee you this: you will not like what it looks like for you, because it's going to be designed to keep those that are in power continuing to be in power, and then just robbing you, really. I mean, negative rates are about taking away principal. They've already took away all the value, all the purchasing power value. Now they got to go to principal because there's nothing left. What's at the end of that? The end of that is a conversion, and if they have their way, it will be into a digital currency, into a what do they call it? We're in the fourth revolution, where it's going to be like kings and serfs, where you just have this small group that owns everything and everybody else that rents.
So that'll be a you're talking about the global currency that's coming.
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
This is huge. This is not, you know, just because you're in New Zealand and I'm in America, we're all on the same planet together, and everybody, every single person, even in China, in every single country, the monetary regime is shifting. And if we don't know it, it's going to shift to what benefits those that are already in power. And that's the goal. The goal is to make the shift but remain in power and have everybody's wealth and all of the control. And as you so aptly pointed out earlier, you know, he or she who has the money has the control. Why do you think central banks and one percenters are buying gold? Because that's what's going to keep them in control, not the rest of the garbage.
Mm.
That goes away. It only has a value as long as the currency has value. And that it doesn't really have much purchasing power officially in this country. We have way less that, or just, I should say, just a little bit more than 3 cents. We don't even have 4 cents left out of the original dollars worth of purchasing power. That's official. That's not my guess. That's what the Federal Reserve on Fred, just Google it, Federal Reserve, F-R-E-D, Fred, purchasing power of the consumer dollar. And you'll see it goes like that. So, you know, there's no value in there left. That's why they have to go to negative rates that attack your principal. Now they want your principal.
Well, it's interesting. They don't have any principals if that's what they do. The question is, what was it Patrick Wood told me? He says, if you don't have a seat at the table, you're on the menu.
Yeah. I think he's absolutely right about that. And he's quite a brilliant man. I have a lot of respect for him.
And this is the difficulty that we're now facing as well. I mean, in New Zealand, we had one mosque shooting. In fact, it was two mosques that got shot up. What am I saying? And the government says, hey, you know what? Let's solve this problem of white supremacists from Australia coming over to New Zealand, getting guns off of police and shooting up people during police drills. Let's solve that problem. How are you going to solve that? Well, we're going to take all the guns off of everybody, and we're going to take everybody's freedom of speech off them, and we're going to make it illegal to investigate this incident. Okay?
Well, that makes sense to me.
Oh, we're all going to die.
Because guess what? If somebody really, you know, back in the day when I had clients, I don't have clients anymore because I don't have time, but when I did, one of my clients was a CSI agent, and he told me, he said, Lynette, I gotta tell you, you do not know evil until you've done my job. And if somebody wants to get into your home, they will get into your home. So the best way to protect yourself is with layers of security, layers. So that it's not an easy thing for them to do. So that's what I created in my home were layers, but that's what the gold and the silver and the hemp as you brought out and the brain power, you know, your skill sets, those are layers of control. Making sure that you have, like I started my urban farm with the goal of creating enough food to feed my family. So for about 20 people, because I have lots of sisters and brothers and kids and all that. So that was my goal initially. And then I ended up converting the entire property into what's called a food forest, where, you know, by the time all my fruit and nut trees start to produce really well, I'm probably going to be able to feed maybe 100 people or more off of my little teeny piece of property. Because when people are hungry, they make choices that they would not normally make. So, and I really, it bothers me so much to see anybody, especially a child, but anybody, have to go to bed hungry in this world where there really is so much abundance and so much gets thrown out. So, you know, for my part, I can do my YouTube channel where I help to educate people and show them, you know, I give all of the links. I don't want people to have to do any work at all. If you want to see how I'm formulating my opinion, you've got all of the links to, not all the research that I do, because that would be a book every time, but you've got all of the links to the research. You could see it for yourself. You know, it's just really, people need to do their own due diligence. They shouldn't take anybody's word for anything. That means anybody's word for everything. Yeah, everything is fine. Look at this. The U.S., the consumers. Oh, yeah, everything else is crap, but the consumers are so strong. That is garbage. Don't believe them. Don't take their word for it as we're watching the bond markets implode Oh, my God.
Well, they're producers, and that's the thing as well. You're born basically as a creator, right? And you can create and trade based upon your own skills, talents, whatever resources you can get your hands on, that kind of thing. But the future won't be like that. You will be born as cattle, and you will never be able to leave your pen until it's time for slaughter. Okay. And if you think I'm just, you know, blowing that out of proportion, ladies and gentlemen, have a look at Agenda 21. Have a look at Technocracy. Go and have a look at Patrick Wood's work. Okay. Yeah. So this is going to be a day in the life of a future slave, ladies and gentlemen. You will wake up, and if you had a dream that gave you positivity, you're going to be fined. All right. Because they'll be able to read your dreams when you're sleeping. If you think to yourself during the thing, man, I really hate living under an oppressive government, you're going to have a fine, and you're going to have some kind of privilege taken away from you. Like, for example, you would be able to go on a train, but now you can't, so you have to take the bus instead. Every single thing that you could possibly do within your daily life that would make you more free, more intelligent, more independent will be illegal, okay? And you will be punished. You will be punished on a daily basis. Now, you'll be put in a small slave block apartment that's along roadside railroad tracks, and you will have a zone badge, okay? Whether that badge is on your phone or under your skin, doesn't matter. You won't be able to retreat or get out of your authorized zone unless you do something very, very special for the government. Right. And what will happen is the vast majority of people will turn into snitches. Okay. Your neighbors will be spying on you. Your government will be spying on you. And this will all be collated in real time via the new 5G network that's going out. And you'll never actually negotiate with a person. You'll never actually see a human being watching you. There won't be any eyeballs on you. This is all going to be done via data algorithm. Okay. Imagine a slaughterhouse with robots in charge times a million. And that is the future for humanity, ladies and gentlemen. They just moved 30 million farmers in China, or was it 300 million? I forget which. Patrick told me about this on the thing. 30 to 300 million farmers in China just got moved off of their farms recently. Just moved off. The largest forced migration in human history. You never heard about it, did you, folks?
Yeah.
What's going to happen to all that land that they've been settled on and plowing for thousands of years? It's all going to be turned into factory farms by the government. Okay? Imagine, ladies and gentlemen. In fact, don't imagine. It's already here. And that means that you don't have your freedom. You don't have your life unless you're fighting for it. Okay? The only people that have any freedom in this day and age, in this society, are the ones who are fighting for it. Or the people who are letting it go, they don't have any. Not yet. Let's stop that future from happening, ladies and gentlemen. Why? Because you're not going to enjoy it. All right? If you want to talk about it just from a purely selfish point of view, I mean, that's the reason why I started doing all this. Vinny, why are you doing all this? Because I'll get enslaved or exterminated if I don't, for sure. Okay. All right. Well, you know, it's not a choice. It's an obligation. Right. And this is what we all have to find within ourselves. See the nightmare future. Know that you don't want it. Do something to change it, because the future is not here yet. The present is the only thing that matters, because it's the only place where you can do anything to affect the future or honor the past.
Right.
A little bit of a quasi dream there. The question is, how exactly does the ordinary person financially secure themselves? And, you know, here's the thing. A lot of people have been saying financial collapse is coming. Financial collapse is coming for decades and decades and decades and decades. And it never seems to happen quite the way they say it's going to. So I was wondering, how do you reconcile that? Because to my mind, it's more like what I'm saying is like, here's the nightmare future. It's coming unless you stop it, sort of thing.
Well, I agree with that. And 3% of the population is aware, then they're not going to be able to execute their full plan. But, you know, also what I would say is that people think that a collapse always has to go like that. And so it's not happening unless it's visible to them. But the reality is, once it becomes visible to you, I mean, think about 2008. Okay, in July, now that collapse was coming for a while. And just because it wasn't visible to the regular Main Street doesn't mean that the erosion wasn't taking place. In 2008, the system that we knew died, period, end of discussion. And then central banks started to experiment because they used up all their tools because the system, the way they designed it, does not work. Did they fix anything? The things that created the collapse in 2008 are worse today than they were then. The only thing that's happened between 2008 and today was a whole lot more debt burden for taxpayers globally. And a lot of wealth has transferred. The top 1% are 10% wealthier or more. Even the middle class, even the upper middle class and below have lost ground. Mm-hmm. So, and the other thing that is really, really, really key, it's something that I show all the time and will, you know, in the rest of the week for the work that I put out, is they have transferred the risk from the few, from the one percenters, from the bankers that created the mess to begin with, to the many, to the population, to the pension plans, to the mutual funds, to the ETFs. So that Joe Normal guy has no clue that that deposit that he makes into his retirement plan with every paycheck is going to prop these guys up. Jeff Bezos just sold, about $3 billion worth of stock? And in the same paper, but different parts of the paper, so we don't connect the two. There was something about, yes, this is the worst run in, you know, 6 months or whatever it was, but stay the course. If you're a long-term investor, you should be buying this hand over fist. Well, why is Jeff selling? He's the quintessential insider. He knows more about that company than anybody else does. Now, he said he was only going to sell $1 billion because he wants to go to the moon, and I wish he would because I'm not a fan. However, why'd he sell three? Right? You see my point? He's getting out. You're getting in. You don't know. He's the smartest guy about his company, and he's selling out. I mean, you can see it. You can see this risk transfer. So, you know, when you say, well, yeah, I've been talking about it for decades and nothing real. I came here in 2002 when I saw technically, because I'm a technician, technically that the shift was upon us. I got here on June 22nd. The trend shift was confirmed. I think it was October 9th. I could be off by a day or two, but I'll be pretty close. Okay. Lots have happened since 2002. And not just in the spot price that was at like, I think, 258 or something like that at that time. Silver was like $4.35 on the spot market. The spot market is a Wall Street product. It's supposed to represent gold and silver unmined in the ground. It's garbage. If you read the documents when they created it, it was designed for perception management to keep you away from gold and silver. That's what the spot markets are about. But technically speaking, there's been a tremendous amount of erosion. You know, it's kind of like the Jenga game. And I just did a little video to explain that question specifically. And, you know, oh, here's negative rates and here's lower earnings and here's this and here's that. I don't know which Jenga piece is going to cause the whole thing to topple. But what I do know is one of those things will. And when it becomes obvious, that's when it's too late to do anything about it. If you're holding your wealth in those stock markets or those bond markets and those pension plans and those IRAs and all that, and it's all intangible, if it's not in your hand, you don't really own it. I don't care that your perception says, well, but look at this statement that says I have XYZ. You are merely a beneficial owner. And everybody between you and the true owner, which this is true globally, is Seed and Company. That is the legal registered owner. You can check it out. Go to the SEC. Pull up any bond contract. pull up any stock contract, and you will see either Seed and Company or DTC or DTCC. They're all the same. Those guys are all the same. So it's just perception that you hold that wealth. If you leave it in that system, poof. And once they say, no, you can't get it out, what are you going to do? Look at what happened in Greece, in Cyprus, in all those bank closures. You can go, you can bang on the doors, you can do anything you want. It's not going to matter. It's not going to matter. So, yeah, a lot has happened in the decades. This has been the most brilliant part of the Keynesian experiment, was that this was the first time that they attempted to control the rate and speed of inflation. Prior to that, they'd go off the gold standard, they'd inflate the currency to fund the war, everybody would lose confidence in the currency, they'd go back on a gold standard, and you'd have 40, 50 years in between for people to forget and to recoup. We've been in a perpetual state of war since 1989, a perpetual state of war. And our currency has lost all of its purchasing power value. The only reason why you don't know it is because you still accept it as a tool of barter. Because you're still going to go out to the grocery store and use it. And they knew when they created it that people, these are their words, not mine, people marry the legal money of the state. Dollar can never go away. Are you kidding me? The dollar can never go away. Guess what they do? They keep the name the same. In July of 1971, I had a $20 bill in my pocket. In September of 1971, I got a new $20 bill. Looked pretty much like the old $20 bill. Didn't look very much different. So I don't know that anything has changed, because it looks the same to me. But the reality is, everything had changed. Everything. We now handed over full control of inflation to banks. And guess what banks know? They know debt. They know leverage. There's only 10% of the population that collects interest and 90% of the population that pays it. And the ones that collect it have been deemed too big to fail. And they're the ones that it wasn't just that they got bailed out, but they got a whole lot bigger and a whole lot more powerful. And you were talking about lobbyists. The rules have changed to benefit them and not to benefit you. I mean, I could go on and on and on about this and how the rules have changed. But just because you haven't seen, you know, a market implosion of 5,000, you know, points, does not mean that there is no foundation on that market anymore. 80% of what happens on in the stock market is all algorithms. They're all formulas. There's no humans. There are no market makers anymore.
And that's very unfortunate, because last time the market makers screwed up the economy, they jumped to their deaths out of the tall buildings in New York and the stock exchange in the 1920s. But nowadays, all the algorithms are doing it, and it's the ordinary investors and things like that that are killing themselves as a result. Suicide rates around these financial collapses are absolutely massive. And I was just thinking about this, you know, the old saying that fortune favors the bold and fortune favors the prepared. Right. And, you know, there's three things you can't argue with: facts, results, and that statement. Now, the thing about scams is that if a scam's working, like you said, they don't change the name. They just keep, it's the dollar. It's a scam. It's a scam. They keep going.
They say that in their work when they're planning all these changes. They actually say, let's see, if we do it this way, it'll keep it as close to what people are used to as possible, and that will prevent a negative feedback.
Precisely. And the scam artist code is this: if your scam is working, don't change the name. If your scam is not working, change the name.
Exactly.
You know, oh, it's wholesale theft. No, it's not. It's quantitative easing, bro. Like.
There you go. And who even knows what that is? And hey, Japan, they've got QE, QQE, QQE with QE, and YCC, which is yield curve control, where there's where they the theory was that they could control both the short end and the long end, and therefore they wouldn't have an inverted yield curve. Guess what? Their yield curve just inverted the other day.
Oh, great.
Guess they didn't have very good control, huh?
Oh, you mean it's it was a scam from the beginning? You mean government scams and lies people all the time because they're actually in the employ of organized crime? Oh, well, I didn't see that coming. The concept is basically you can make society do what you want if you bribe them enough. And I think what's happened with banks essentially is somebody came into them one day. I mean, this is figurative. This probably never actually happened. Hey, bro, yeah, you know that you don't have a conscience, right? And you'll just loan money to anybody, right? Yeah. But you know how you have to actually risk losing money when you loan it to people? Yeah. Well, why don't you just make the money up and give it to them? And then when they don't pay you back, you collect all the assets that they bought with their money. Okay, how about that? And you're like, wow, that sounds really good. I'll never have to work again. Everybody else will to pay me. How brilliant. And then you get richer and richer and richer. What are all the most expensive, fancy, tallest looking buildings in any city in the world? The banking. Oh, okay. Why is that?
It's because they made the money up, you assholes.
Well, I'm going to throw this out at you as well. If you think of it like a wagon wheel, and in the center, you have the central banks that actually create the money. They'll push a button, and now there's all this money, right? Then who is closest to that, the center? It's the banks. So now let's say in this kind, well, this is probably true everywhere. The government wants to borrow money, right? So they go to the central bank. The treasury issues debt. They go to the central bank to create that money, but that money goes into the banks first. And then the government gets it. The banks pay lower interest than the government does. But who's responsible for all that government debt? The public, the taxpayers. And guess what? The state debt is even higher. Interest on the state debt is higher than the federal debt, which is higher than the banks, which, of course, then are the closest to the central banks that create the money. These are all private organizations. They're corporations.
Well, and I remember when I was in university, I only spent maybe 2 years in university because I realized that they were trying to teach me to be critical of people who could think instead of teaching me critical thinking, which is what I was there to learn. But while I was there, I decided to ignore all my lecturers and just go into the AV room and start watching documentaries, right? And I learned so much more watching documentaries than I ever could from listening to my lecturers who were trying to indoctrinate me. One of the documentaries I saw was The Corporation, all right? And they lined up what are the aspects and the behaviors of a corporation and what is the psychological profile of a psychopath's behaviors. They're identical, okay? Now, that's something that should really shock everybody, and it only really clicked for me about maybe 3-4 years into doing the show after having a bunch of interviews with Thomas Sheridan and then having a psychopath actually attack me and steal my company, Guerrilla Media, which I don't have anymore. So the concept for me was the reason why these corporations act psychopathic is because at the very top levels, only the psychopaths advance. All right. Now, I'm not saying that everybody who works for a corporation is a psycho. What I'm saying is that the likelihood of a psychopath getting to the top of that corporation is far, far in advance of any good person with a conscience for one specific reason. They cheat. Okay, let's say there's three of you up for a promotion. One of you's a psychopath. He spreads rumors about the two other people being lazy and being pedophiles and blah, blah, blah. There's no facts to the rumors whatsoever. But the CEO who's appointing the promotion, he hears about these rumors of these two people, but doesn't hear any rumors about this guy because everybody who tried to tell him the truth about this guy, that guy came up to them and really badly threatened them. And then the psychopath gets the promotion, and then everybody's under his control, and his psychopathic mentality will filter down to all the departments below him. Okay? Now you understand why corporations can turn people into consciousless beings, all right? You ever been, I was at the airport one time and I went up to the help desk asking for help. And they said, oh, I'm sorry, we don't do that here. And
they go, get you a freaking help desk! Get you!
You know, people just can't do their job. And it's problematic as well, because purity, goodness, that comes from within. That comes from looking at yourself and you're going, Vinny, you're a dick. You're a narcissistic. Can't stop doing it. Stop doing it. Stop doing it. Be a good person. All right. And I go, all right. And then, but it's the people that you've got to really worry about who don't have that little voice. Hey, should I do this? Yeah. You know, that kind of like frightening thing. And I think basically narcissism, psychopathy, these are two things that should be taught to children. Okay, at a very, very young age. Okay, hey, little Jimmy, the world's run by narcissistic psychopaths, and here's the lessons you got to follow so that you don't turn into one of them. No, Jimmy, that's not how it works. Okay, but no, that's not how it works. There's narcissistic psychopaths, and they don't have any rules. They don't have any conscience. They don't give a okay. And you're going to have to harden yourself against this, little Jimmy, if you wish to survive it in this environment. Okay, and I think we're getting into this point where self-analysis, especially on comment sections, almost doesn't exist anymore. Have you noticed this, Lynette? You know, people like
I don't read the comments. Actually, you're smarter than Eric does. I just don't.
You know, you're smarter than me. I got a comment the other day that just totally exemplifies what I'm talking about. Vinny Eastwood is retard. And I go, well, let's just unpack that for a second. you know, it's very obvious that these people don't think and certainly don't analyze what it is that they're thinking before they go out and do it. And one thing I was going to say is the term geriactivists. Okay, when you're saying that you're going out there and you're doing the research and you're providing all the links and things like that, it's mostly my elders who possess those skills. Okay, that's why the elders are primarily the ones who are actually engaging in the largest quantity of activism, particularly effective activism, because the lazy little kids like me who got put off of reading, put off of researching, and all of that kind of stuff, and think that, you know, we could just do a radio show with somebody who does all that. And it just occurred to me during the show is that, Lynette, you're not going to be around forever. The G. Edward Griffins and Jordan Maxwells of this world aren't going to be around forever. We're never going to be able to rely on their ability to research and break things down for a longer period of time. And I was just like, shit, I have to take responsibility for doing research now. I have to take responsibility for doing all of these things, because if I don't, then my elders have taught me nothing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we can hand you the torch, but you have to take it on. And like I said earlier, I don't really foresee me stopping. And I do have longevity in my family, so I expect to be around till my 90s. I don't know that I'm going to want to do this until my 90s. But yeah, and I'm very healthy, and I specifically pay a lot of attention to that. So I figure I'm going to be around for quite some time, but long enough for you to learn that skill.
So lastly here, we're going to be coming down to the end of the show. We've got about 5 to 10, 15 minutes left. I was wondering if there is some kind of self-promotion that you actually want to go. Do you have products, services, things of that nature that you can offer people, merchandising, anything of that nature?
Well, you know, I would say I've been here for a really long time, and pretty much everybody else has been here too. And we are a full service physical gold and silver dealer. And what we like to really do is create strategies, which are really like, if you're doing the strategy from us, you're actually doing my strategy, but tweaked to your personal goals and circumstances. And we're also not just going to throw you into gold and silver and go, oh, have a nice life. No, when you come to the ITM, you become a family, part of our family. And everybody here, it's not just me doing all of the research and the work. Everybody here pays attention, because, of course, one person cannot do it all. So it's a really strong family. It's a really strong team. And we're here through this trend cycle and beyond. We've been here since 95. We intend to be here through this cycle and then way well beyond it. So, I mean, that's what we are all about. We definitely believe that if you don't hold it, you don't own it, because that's what the data and the documents say. And we also believe very strongly that since this is an issue of the monetary system, that everybody needs to own the real money. So in my work, what you'll see is I'm trying to teach people to recognize simple patterns, to know what the smartest guys on any given topic are doing for themselves, so that you don't necessarily, I mean, certainly I encourage everybody to do your own due diligence and to become as knowledgeable about this stuff as possible. But a lot of people don't want to do that. They're busy living their lives. But there's just a few little things that if you can learn to recognize the patterns, nobody can pull the wool over your eyes. And that's what the job of the talking heads are about. So that's who we are. That's what we do. You know, we've got, I mean, I produce three pieces at a minimum of three pieces a week for our YouTube channel. And it really is all about education and about bringing value to the table so that people can make educated choices that support their goals first. And that's our approach, is what are your goals? We're going to show you. We're going to give you the tools and the skill sets and develop the plan for you that puts your best interest first. And not just because we say so, here's why. So that's what we're about. And you can find us on YouTube, ITM Trading. You can Google my name, Lynette Zhang. I'm pretty sure I'll come up. You know, or you can call us. We love human contact, which is another thing that is seems to be going by the wayside, although I think I'm hoping we're getting a little bit of a comeback. But we actually care. I mean, in my youth, it was primarily little mom and pops. And so that if you're not happy with something, or if you need something, or if we can be of service, you know, we like that one-on-one human contact. And we do a lot to maintain that here. So I think everybody would find that the service that you get here, the caring that you get here from all of us as a team is far, far greater than what you're probably getting anywhere else you're going, not just in the gold and silver industry, but just in general, you know, as well.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Now, if there are any questions from the comment section, ladies and gentlemen, please fire them out. In the last few minutes here, we're going to open it up to some audience participation. Now, we have one comment in here from Rika, the hopeful voluntarist. He says, okay, I like her. She reminds me of Catherine Austin Fitz. Oh,
I like Catherine Austin, but I don't agree with everything she says, but I like her very much too. Very brilliant woman. So thank you very much. That's a compliment for sure.
I'd like to find somebody who does agree with something, with everything anybody says. And that was that's the thing. It's like when you've got a cult, you know, and a cult leader, I believe everything they say.
Right.
I saw a great Dr. Evil meme, yesterday, I think it was, or maybe the day before, and he's got the quotation marks up here, and he goes, "A small loan of $1 million." And for those of you who don't get the reference, that was actually one thing Donald Trump said, is when he was starting off on his whirlwind billionaire franchise tours and what have you. Then he said, "Oh, my father gave me a small loan of $1 million," and I was just thinking, how detached can one person possibly be from the public consciousness to think $1 million is a small loan? You know, that kind
of
thing.
Well, when we go into hyperinflation, that will probably buy you an egg. And I am not exaggerating. Look at Zimbabwe.
Yeah, that's right. The recipient.
We've been trained to put value in those dollars, when in reality, they have no value. It's what you can convert them into that matters. And what that creates is called nominal confusion. Again, their term, not mine, although it's a great one. I wish I did make that up, but I didn't. And it works like this. You had a $20 bill 10 years ago. You got a $20 bill today. Nominally, they're identical. They're both $20 bills. So you just think you got a $20 bill. But what that $20 bill bought you 10 years ago and what it buys you today, vastly different. So sorry, I just had to put that in there.
Don't apologize. That's what the show's for.
$1 million in the 80s when Donald was getting started was a lot of dollars at that point, right? When I first became a stockbroker, you could put $1 million into government treasuries and generate 10% a year. Today, so you could live off of it and not touch your principal. Today, it's not worth as much, is it?
Yeah, it's not. And we have a first question in here from Wee Tree Bonsai. Question, does she suggest stacking silver? What does stacking silver mean?
What that means is buying it, and so you're stacking it up in piles. That's called, when you're accumulating gold or silver, it's called stacking, because you can put the actual coins in piles. And the answer is yes. For me, I mean, gold is the primary currency metal. It is what they reset the currency against, revalue the currency against. Silver is the secondary currency metal, and it has kind of a dual purpose. That's why, you know, sometimes, well, that's actually why through these kind of hyperinflationary events, gold's always outperformed silver, because it's a manufacturing-based, industrial, as well as a money. But it's absolutely perfect for day-to-day barterability. So yes, stack. The fundamental value of silver is somewhere today, somewhere around $600 or more. And so, but you also want to do it with a variety of sizes. You know, so like a tenth of an ounce, a quarter of an ounce, a half an ounce, and an ounce. I'm not recommending any big blocks, because it's hard to kind of put in your pocket and have that invisible. But you can put a couple of dimes together. If you're American then and you're calling us, then we actually have formulas that can calculate out how much you are likely to need for a given period of time based upon your current cost of living. But I personally have a tendency, I want a variety of sizes, but I have a tendency to like more of the smaller sizes, only because change becomes irrelevant during these periods of time, and it's easier to put two dimes together than to break a quarter in half. So yes, stack silver, but you also need gold. You need both. You need both.
Mm-hmm. Now, I also want to advise people that silver isn't just used as a currency. Almost all the advanced technology that we are using today, communications technology and things like that, also employs silver in the manufacturing of those products.
And gold, so that's as well.
That's right. That's right. So that's part of the reason why the investments, I think, pay off. Part of the reason is that they store wealth. And part of the other reason is we wouldn't have modern society without those resources to put in our technology.
More thing in there, you have, when you're looking at the physical precious metals, you have the broadest base of buyer. Because it's used across, not just, and this is true for both gold and silver, it's also used in medical technology, it's used in the financial system, it's used in jewelry, it's used in art. I've even eaten gold. I mean, not, it was, you know, flakes, but they get pounded down really thin. And gold, both gold and silver have properties that they have not been able to duplicate in the labs. And so where with fiat money products or Wall Street products, it has use in one area only, one. But with both physical gold and silver, it has the broadest base of buyer, has the most buyers. That's one big reason why it holds its wealth, because there's always demand, always.
Got a question in here from, what was it? Can you FedEx Vinny some gold bullion, please, from Benny Mac? I'll take that as a no. Next question. We've got to go down to here. We've got Wee Tree Bonsai again. Question, can gold coins be done the same as silver?
Not sure what they mean by that. Could you clarify?
Sure. Yeah. Please clarify that. Does she handle those transactions? So when you're selling gold and silver and things like that, do you handle those transactions?
Oh, I personally, frankly, I don't have time for clients, but I have a huge room full of precious metals consultants, strategy specialists, and almost everybody back there we've been together for a very, very long time. So, if you're working with them, frankly, you're working with me, and they'll probably sound pretty much the same as I do. They're very, very intelligent, really smart.
Question in here from a donor, Carmen. She says, what about other metals like copper?
Well, copper is an industrial metal, and this is an issue around money. So my focus is on the monetary metals, because with a global slowdown, what do you think that means for copper? But this is not a trade. This is a money issue. Same thing with a platinum, which is more rare than gold, but it's still an industrial metal. So since this is a money issue, I personally, at this juncture, just do gold and silver.
Okay, and we've got another question in here from Ing B. What happens during the reset?
What happens? Well, you can look at Venezuela for that. You can also look at Argentina. But what happens, there's lots of things that happen. At some point, interest rates break. So if you're sitting in variable rate debt, it's going to drown you. And you'll see the value of the currency drops, which means that prices for everything, food, going out, whatever you want, those go through the roof. And typically you have, on average, it's worse in Venezuela, I believe it's 90% of the population end up in abject poverty. But remember I said 90%. Globally, on average, 80% of the population ends up in abject poverty. And you have a lot of, I'm sorry about this, depopulation, because people die. They can't afford their food, they can't afford their meds, and during hyperinflation, during these resets, food becomes the single biggest issue. That's why it's really important to make sure that you have food put back. Now, for me, mostly I've done it with my gardens, and I have lots of security, and I have lots of people, but not everybody is wanting to or having the ability to do that. So, but beans and rice, dried beans and rice, that's easy to store, and guess what? That creates a complete protein. I also suggest, but everybody can, there's vertical growing. I mean, there are all different things that you need to do, but you need to create some food security, because generally speaking, grocery stores have enough food on the shelves for 3 days. Most people have enough food in their home for 3 days. So what happens after those 3 days or those 6 days, if you happen to hit it just right? Okay, then people start to panic because the shelves go bare. So, definitely you want to accumulate. The other thing that I really recommend, it's not expensive and it doesn't take up a whole lot of space, is to buy a few pounds of sprouting seeds. Broccoli happens to be the most nutrition. So you rinse them off, and in 3 days, you actually have live food to eat. So if you put that together with your beans and your rice, even if you're in a little apartment and you have no balcony, so you can't grow anything else, your food. And then the second issue that becomes huge is medicine. So, first of all, you should always try and be as healthy as you possibly can, so that's just not an issue for you. But if you have some kind of chronic illness, all of this is the kind of thing that goes into the strategy that we create for our clients to help cover any of those occurrences. But, if you're preparing, if your medications, you might want to stock up a little bit on them because the pharmacy shelves go bare. So it's really pretty nasty, but then that's also what creates those opportunities. So for those that are sitting in the gold, which is why you see the 1%ers and the central bankers accumulating, right? Because, I mean, imagine this. People can't pay their mortgage. They're going to feed themselves before they pay their mortgage, right? So all of that property, and there's so much leverage out there. All of the buildings that you see going on, like I'm in Phoenix, they're building things all over the place here. But all of that has been funded with debt and then sold back to you, to your retirement plan. It's been securitized. That's what that means. So that all of that, though, is coming back on the market. In Japan, in the early 90s, when that bubble popped, and this is what I think it's going to look more like. Residential real estate dropped 85% and commercial dropped 95%. Now, because of the technology and the way things, you have to be selective in what you're going to convert into. But even cities and countries, you know, when Greece was in the depth of their financial crisis, they sold their port to China, hopefully on leverage. Anybody want a Greek port? Which I know sounds outrageous, but globally, on average, it's not like this has never, on a global scale, it's never happened before. But currency resets and currency life cycles, that's happened over 4,800 times. So there's a lot of data to be able to look at what happens to these different assets during this period and then get yourself into a position to take advantage of it. Which may sound cold and awful, but if you're starving, you can't feed somebody else. So yeah. The better position that you are in, the more people you can help, and that goes back to the community. I'm huge on community, but that's what it looks like. And people that are hungry and hopeless make choices they would not otherwise make. It's ugly. Look at Venezuela. It's ugly. That's what it looks like.
Yeah. Trying to eat stray dogs, that kind of thing, or having, what was it, pregnant women thrown out on the street because there just aren't the hospital facilities available to birth their children and they die in the street kind of thing. That's what you're looking forward to, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't do anything to stop the system. Now, we have a question here from...
Well, excuse me. I'm sorry to say this. We cannot stop the reset. We cannot stop what's coming, but you can be prepared so that's not you and you have the ability to help others. We can't stop this. The system has to reset. It's dead. It's dead. I'm sorry. It's dead.
And that pertains to the next question in here from M. Marker. Question, when is her best estimate of a date for when the reset will happen?
I have some crystal balls. I don't look at those. And I can't get, I hope that they can pull another damn rabbit out of their hat and postpone this because I've been preparing and I'm more ready than almost anybody that I know. And I don't feel ready yet. Honestly, if the central bankers and the governments cannot pull another rabbit out of their hat, I'm afraid we're already walking through it. I'm afraid that the market implosion that is already underway, if they can't get some level of control over this, I mean, the next step is QE, QQE, but I mean, we're that close. I'm sorry. We're very close. I can't give you a specific day, but I'm very nervous. And if anybody wants to go back, I've been doing this for many years. There's lots and lots of data. You'll see that I am way more nervous today than I was a year ago or even at the beginning of this year.
It's funny you should mention that, because when our socialist prime minister Jacinda Ardern got elected, I was more frightened at that stage in my life than I ever have before with anything to do with politics. And I'd been doing this for about 10 years at that point, and exposed our previous prime ministers and every single party in the country. And this was like a huge threat. And I've been absolutely vindicated in that. No free speech on the internet. No guns to defend yourself against tyrannical government, higher taxation than ever before, higher population in the homeless position than ever before. You know, it just gets worse and worse and worse. And, you know, I'd be happy if, for being right, if I wasn't such a jaded, cynical person who always assumes that bad things are going to happen. And unfortunately, just like Dr. Ian Malcolm in Jurassic Park, boy, I hate being right all the time.
Yeah. And you see, we lost sound.
No, I'm still here.
Oh, all right. I saw your lips moving, but I couldn't hear anything.
I don't know.
You were just teasing. Yeah, I don't think of myself as cynical or jaded. I don't. Actually, I see opportunities, but I am also have been working really diligently on, I'm going to be able to help as many people as I can. And I mean, that's what a lot of my work is about on the YouTube. So, you know, for that question, get ready. No matter what, don't we all need food, water, security, community, barterability, shelter, wealth preservation? Don't we all need that anyway? So, you know, look, if you haven't started preparing, start now. Don't wait another day. Don't wait another minute. I'm just dead serious about this. I do not like what I'm seeing from a technical perspective. You know, forget everything else. Just looking at those technicals and going to watch some of my videos and you'll see what I'm talking about. I mean, seriously, 35 countries, probably more today, but I just did this the other day. At that moment, I think it was on the 9th, that I pulled this data, 35 countries had inverted yield curves, and 14 were about to. And as of this morning, in the U.S., we've got 29 different yield curves that have inverted. And that always tells you of a looming recession. This isn't going to be a recession. This isn't even going to be a depression. This is a reset because the system no longer works. There's no value left in the currency. None. They can't inflate. That's why they can't create the inflation they keep calling for. Yet, goodness, aren't the prices of what you buy every day going up?
Mm.
Right? But they can't create inflation. We can't get over it. We're trying to get 2% inflation and we can't get it. Are you kidding me? Been to the grocery store lately? Fortunately, I haven't. But, you know, for most people, I mean, it's a joke. But that's because they can't inflate the value away. The next step is hyperinflation. And this isn't something I'm waiting for. This is something that has already begun to evolve. So I can't tell you exactly the day that you're going to notice it, but I'm noticing it already.
Kind of like a doctor will see somebody who's, vitamin C deficient or something like that, and they'll see these symptoms and what have you. You kind of like that, right? And
yeah.
I was thinking, what should be the name for it? It's not a recession. It's not a depression. It's going to be
reset.
No, I think it's going to be the desolation.
You can put that, the desolation of the fiat money system. Absolutely. But if you're Googling out there, and Christine Lagarde is head of the IMF in this one interview, I think I counted, and she said, talked about the need for a reset 13 times in one interview.
Whoa. Okay.
I don't think she was kidding.
We have one more question in here from M. Marker. I'm not sure if we've answered this already. When the reset happens, do you think the restart will be a new world currency like a Phoenix world dollar?
Yeah, I think it's probably going to emanate from the IMF. And the name of that new global currency is the SDR, which was actually originally created in 69 to take over as the world reserve currency until the U.S. went on the petrodollar, that China was actually the one, I mean, I'd known about the SDR forever, but it was just languishing, not really doing very much until 2008. And then in 2009, China said, what about the SDR? And I thought to myself, well, that's got to be it, because they don't have to reinvent the wheel. All they have to do is tweak the wheel that's already in place. And they tested all of the systems and injected, don't hold me to this, but I believe it was about 5,000 times more SDRs. Now, an SDR, the SDR stands for Special Drawing Rights. It's just a name. It doesn't mean anything. It's just a name, just like the U.S. dollar or the New Zealand dollar. It's just a name.
Like snake oil.
But it is, pardon?
Like snake oil. It's just a name.
Like, yes, yes, it's like snake oil, but it is composed of a basket of currencies. So, and they've talked about expanding that basket so that if you use SDRs, you can cash them in into local currencies. So I think we're going to end up on a dual currency system with the SDR being used on a global basis, so for global corporations, etc., and then translated into the local currency. So we'll still have the U.S. dollar. Right. And you'll still have the New Zealand dollar. You won't think anything has changed, but everything has changed. So they've been getting that ready. And that's my bet for the next currency.
That's quite an interesting one.
Yeah. And they've been working. AC Chain created something that they actually hold title to property on their coin, so that it can be globally traded. So this is just my guess. But in this next crisis, when you have a mortgage that you can't pay, then they'll give you a break if you hold the title on a special coin. And because you're going to be desperate, just like people were in this country and, you know, to redo their mortgages, what have you. And I think they're going to get a lot of compliance when people are really stressed and scared. I will not be one of those people that comply with that, because I don't want anybody else to have the ability to hold my title. But yeah, that's where they're heading us. Everything is controlled. Everything is visible. Lifetime taxes. Read the IMF working papers. Lifetime taxes. They already know. In 2015, they did a piece, one of my favorite pieces. It's a piece that I've referred back to many, many times since they came out with it in 2015, breaking below the lower zero bound. In other words, going negative on how to get people to volunteer cash. And that's another thing that I'll bring up. I just did another report, I don't know, maybe a week or two ago, from an IMF working paper on how to have the ability to go deeply negative. So like in Europe and Switzerland and the Sweden, they're only mildly negative. And now they're talking about passing that through. I'll be talking about that in an upcoming video. But they're talking, the IMF is talking about going like 4%. They want you to see the loss of money in your account, okay, so that you go out and spend it. So now we don't know exactly how they're going to unroll it. They gave us a few different scenarios of what that would look like. One of them referred to the current cash that is in the system, because the new cash, once they make this transition, which they say they can do within weeks of the next crisis. And they can. It's genius. It's freaking genius. If they do it at the discount window at the central bank that all the commercial banks go to, I mean, it's invisible. It's genius. But they can do that within weeks. so that the new money that they print, just like there was a change in 71, you know, between August and September, that the new money will be embedded with a chip so that if you try to protect your principal by withdrawing cash, well, you're not going to be able to because there's a clock that will start ticking in there. So whenever you use it or whenever you go to redeposit it, it will be subject in value to the same discount, the same negative rates. So part of the strategy is a certain level of cash, which you need as your first line of defense, but you probably want to take it out now. They refer to the cash that is not embedded with anything as cash in the wild, which then will go for premium. Now, the value of that cash is destroyed during hyperinflation, but initially, before people understand what's really happening, it's recognizable. So you don't want just all cash because it'll go poof, but there's a certain level of cash. It's all part of the strategy, and everybody's going to vary a little bit because they have different circumstances, different goals, and different, you know, they're doing different things. But yeah, they've got it all laid out, and it's flipping genius. It is. It's just, they do it so that there's lots of distance between their policy and how it's rolled out to you. Their preference is for, like, your local stores to roll it out to you so that, you know, you go in to buy a cup of coffee, and if you use a debit card or a credit card, $5. If you use cash, $6. What are you going to use?
Right?
Mm. So you're going to volunteer it. They're not going to, because they tested it in India in 2016, and demonetizing 85% of the currency was chaotic, and it didn't really help them. So, you know, I mean, they go to smaller countries like Cyprus when they shut down the banks, and then they bailed in everybody's money until, or everybody's deposits, I should say, until enough people globally were screaming, what about deposit insurance? What about deposit insurance? Then they backed up and they gave you a statement that said you still had that amount in there, but you had no access to it. So, you know, I mean, you've got to be prepared. If everything you have is in the system, that system shuts that door. You are not getting it out. Period. End of discussion. And, you know, I mean, my nickname is Data Gal. If I can't prove it, I don't say it. And that's why I give you links. That's why I do that. So you can, hey, you know, this is why I said that. This is why I said that. You think differently than me? Rock and roll, Ujiku, what can I tell you? But here it is. And it's coming fast. And they're ready. They've been working on this for a long time. I don't know that they're fully ready with the digital money to transition us into, but it's still going to take a while to hyperinflate and get us out of where we are. So,
indeed.
To the next stage where people will accept it. They're scared enough. Yeah, save me, Mr. Bill.
I have a question. Just recently, I mean, during that Christchurch mosque massacre, I got a lot of donations for my coverage and things like that, but I haven't actually followed anything in the news in terms of my channel and what have you in order to get all that money, you know, from everybody chasing the news cycle. I didn't really like it. I did the Christchurch mosque massacre because I'm here. I'm the only person in the alternative media in New Zealand. And so I had an obligation to do that. Now, what I did with all that money that was donated to me is I paid off debts. You know, credit card debt reduced to zero, you know, personal life reduced to zero.
Which is good idea.
I was just wondering how important is that for people to get rid of their debt right now?
Well, actually, I don't think that it's critical to do it just yet. And because you want to watch the interest rates when the interest rates, and if you're watching my channel, you will see this unfold. When interest rates breach a certain level, then they're going to start spiking up quickly. Right now, we're still going into negative rates. So I would not say that you want to necessarily do that immediately. But I will also say this about the debts. If you have a fixed rate debt, than paying that debt off with dollars that have no value, right? So the gold goes up, you convert enough to pay that mortgage off, done. So that is really the strategy that the governments employ. So fixed rate debt, you don't want to pay off yet anyway. You want to let that reset work for you. Variable rate debt is what puts you in danger, because once interest rates start spiking, you will never get out of debt. Never. I don't care how much you pay. Again, look at Venezuela. You know, there's lots of articles and lots of people with that experience, and you're never going to get out of debt. So, you know, I would say you got to pay attention, and you specifically for variable rate debt, you need to pay attention to the interest rates. And once they start breaching certain levels, and I would have to look at the different countries to tell you what they are, but they're pretty obvious once you know how to see the pattern. Which is something I talk about all the time on my channel, so you can start to learn to see what you're looking for. The interest rates are going lower, so I don't feel an immediate need, but I don't carry any variable rate debt. I will tell you that. I haven't in years.
And more questions in from Wee Tree Bonsai. Question, will the SDR, the special drawing rights, have the same debt ratio as the dollar does, meaning will it be worthless?
Well, look, the currencies, any of it, whether it's the dollar or the yen or the euro or the SDR, it only has as much value as you perceive it to have. But here's the difference. To create a dollar anywhere, or a yen or a euro, whatever, because the system is designed to create that from debt. But the SDR is not creating that, because the countries are creating that debt. So if you hear somebody say, like Jim Rickards will say, that has the IMF has the cleanest balance sheet. Well, they don't have to take on debt to create SDRs. That truly is a push of a button. That truly is just a push of a button. It doesn't even raise a sweat. So if it is globally accepted that it will have whatever value that is it's accepted at, though what I will tell you is originally it was based on a certain weight of gold. And over time, as it then went to a basket of currencies, it has lost value as those currencies have lost value.
So
I hope that makes sense.
That's right, it does. And a question in here from Ryan Hill, who's been waiting a while. Question, should you buy a house before or after the reset, and why?
Well, if you're buying a house now, you are buying it near a market top. We all need a place to live, so the choice is entirely up to you. But if you think about what happened in 2008, even when the central banks targeted real estate for reflation, you know, I don't know, do you want to pay it at the top, you want to buy it at the top of the market, or you want to buy it at the bottom of the market? That's up to you. If you accumulate gold, like let's say you've got to put a down payment on, and I'm just going to make my life easy for this example, and let's say that, you know, let's say that you have to put $10,000 down, just to make life easy. Okay. And at the same time, even though I know this is not where it is, gold is at $1,000 an ounce. All right. So now you've taken $10,000 and it still has some purchasing power in it, and you use it as a down payment for an overvalued house. Well, when the house implodes, you always have to have a place to live, but you also have to make sure you can make those mortgage payments, or you will lose that house. Let's say that you even have a house paid off. The biggest risk then becomes, or in addition to the mortgage, is property taxes, because taxes are how governments generate income that they need for all their programs. So property taxes go through the roof. All right, you see the bit of a challenge there with buying property today versus taking that same $10,000 and buying 10 ounces of gold, which is severely undervalued, right? So globally, on average, 25 ounces of gold or the equivalent would buy you an entire city block, buildings and all. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's up to you, because you got to have a place to make your last stand. But and I definitely would not be speculating on real estate right now. But frankly, when you stop and you really just think about it logically, it is always better to have the lion's share of your wealth in an undervalued or fairly valued asset that is in a long-term positive trend, and the least amount of your wealth in an overvalued asset or instrument that is in a long-term negative trend. I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer.
He says, thank you for, I'm going to hold off on buying land for now.
But the opportunity will be there. Take that same money, put it into gold. Gold is about wealth preservation and wealth accumulation. And you do need silver, too, for your day-to-day barterability.
Question in here from Ng B. How will countries revalue their currencies again?
Well, you know, this is good. This is a global issue. So if you, again, I go back, because this is happening in real time, so you can actually see it. When Venezuela, what they'll do is they'll suppress the price of gold for a while until they're ready to revalue it. And then it happens like overnight. Overnight, Venezuela, and they did this a few times, because it happens a few times in the process, but they revalue their currency, and it went down, I think, 92.5%, while the value of gold in terms of their bolivars went up like 3,500% or something like that. And it's continued, gold in terms of their bolivars have continued to skyrocket up. But that's how they do it. They just, you know, oh, we're going to devalue the currency 99%. And at the same time, revalue gold up. So they stop suppressing the gold. It goes back to your question before. There's a finite amount of gold that exists, whether it's in the ground or it's above ground, and it's indestructible. So we can account for pretty much 98% of all of the gold that has ever been mined. And it'll be in a bunch of different forms. It's not gold that has to expand to accommodate economic growth. It is the money supply and then the value of gold in terms of that currency that changes. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's great. Any more questions from the chat room? And by the way, I really want to thank our listeners and commenters for giving us those questions. If you do have a question for the chat room, ladies and gentlemen, question in all caps, followed by your question, and we'll try and get them answered. This is meant to be a 2-hour show. It's getting into the 2.5-hour mark. So thank you, Lynette, so much for all your time that you donate for free. And speaking of which, ladies and gentlemen, affording, you know, what I'm doing here, it's extremely cheap, but it's not free. Okay. So I do need you to go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and donate if you can. If you are a New Zealander, there is a Kiwi Bank account number there that you can start up an automatic payment. And Kiwi Bank takes nothing. PayPal takes a little smidge. Patreon takes an even smaller smidge, so that kind of thing. So Patreon and Kiwi Bank tend to be the best things to do, but if you just want to make a one-off donation, PayPal buttons are there on the homepage of the vinnieeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question in Eastwood. Like, go ahead, make my news. Well, another question in here from Ryan Hall. A question, your thoughts on platinum as an undervalued asset?
Well, platinum is, but it's also an industrial metal. And most of the platinum mining, and I think it's tied mostly to automotive use. So if people are buying fewer cars, there's less call for platinum. Plus, I think that Russia controls most of the platinum market. Russia is one of the most resource rich countries. So it is an industrial metal. It is not a monetary metal. There was a time when it was certainly a lot more in terms of dollars spot than gold. But I remember the shift, and it's because of really what's happening in the economy. So okay to buy it, but not as a monetary metal. Just know what you're doing.
Okay. Rand Martz in the chat room says he has a few ASEs, and I think there's some effective cream available for that. Another question from Magukasu. Question, will one be able to afford a house only with a couple of coins? Is it possible to do that currently in Venezuela, for instance?
Yeah, it is actually possible to do that in Venezuela. This is actually how wealth transfers from the many to the few, and that would be the historic norm. So the answer would be, yeah, that's how that wealth transfers. You can't afford it. Here's somebody with gold that can, and you just need, you know, however many coins in terms of that currency. Because when you got to sell, you got to sell. If you lost it, I mean, the banks don't really want to hold on to all of that real estate. They want to turn it. So, yeah, you'll be able to. Most likely, I'm presuming a repetition of history. Obviously, it's beyond my control. But, you know, if it's happened 4,800 times, I'm kind of thinking, if it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck and it lays eggs like a duck, it's probably a duck.
Now, what about confiscation? People have been concerned about that as well. If they're hoarding gold, hoarding silver and things like that, what can stop the government from just coming and taking it?
Well, there's really, I mean, governments can do anything they want. That's certainly not within our control. But that takes me back to what is the least likely to be confiscated? What are the one percenters doing for themselves? And where I can find that the most easily, frankly, is in what I call ultra rarities, which are collectible coins that start in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, because who can afford those but the 1%? So, you know, that's why personally, now this has not always been true. It was just when we got to a certain place in the trend cycle, then I became very uncomfortable with holding any bullion. I don't know how this is in New Zealand. You might want to check on that. But in America, we've had the experience of gold confiscation 3 times historically. So, you know, I mean, yeah. I think it is highly probable. But again, if somebody's paid $1 million for 1 ounce of gold and the government confiscates it for the face value, which all that new bullion has a $50 face value, somebody that paid $1 million for it, number one, they're not going to accept 50. Number two, if they could afford that, they either write the laws where they most likely can influence those that write the laws. In the U.S., for me to determine what am I going to buy, including silver, what am I going to buy for myself, I look at what the government allows inside of IRAs. And if they allow it inside of an IRA, I don't want it. Because it's most likely, it's easy to confiscate. When it's not in my hands, it's easy to confiscate. In India, they went door to door because holding gold is more normal. In the U.S., they're not going to go to door to door for less than 1% of the population that might hold some gold. So, now, but it depends on how you're holding it. That's why I don't personally hold any silver bullion, yes, because it gets used up in manufacturing. So I think it would just be too complicated and hard to confiscate, even though they did in 33. But I have a variety anyway. So I have some of the pre-64, you know, dimes and quarters and half dollars and dollars, as well as some of the new rounds and silver eagles and things like that. But with gold, I don't have any bullion, none. That's not always been true.
Now, we have a question here from our moderator, Gakmal Party. How long do you think the euro will survive, or will the dollar collapse sooner than that?
Oh, they're all collapsing. The euro was a doomed experiment from the beginning. Historically, what the euro is a bunch of economies pegged together. So based on Germany's economy, which Germany is sinking into recession officially, probably already there, but officially, they pegged all their currencies together in the euro, and that was to enable these countries that really couldn't afford it to borrow cheaper, which enriched Germany and obviously did just the opposite for everybody else. But that system is breaking down. Greece, frankly, should have left, but they weren't going to let Greece kill the euro. Whoever leaves, because in Greece's case, they actually used the euro in their economy. We've got Brexit coming up, but they don't use the euro. They use the pound. So for them to leave, and look at how long. I mean, they voted to leave in 2016. You know, are they going to actually leave on October 31st? I don't know. It'll be interesting. Or will they postpone it? But they couldn't let Greece leave because Greece used the euro. And, you know, Italy is leading up to leave. So, I mean, please. It's a failed experiment. They knew it was going to fail. Historically, no pegged system has worked. None. For very long. Which one's going to be first? Well, we're all in a race to the bottom right now. Even the talking heads on TV are saying, we're in the race to the bottom. I don't know who's going first, but whoever goes first, they're taking everybody else with them anyway, because Deutsche Bank, who is in Germany, is, according to the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, the single most dangerous bank in the world, because they are classified as a global universal bank, which means that they are tied like a spider web to every single financial instrument and financial institution in the world on some level. And they show you that. I mean, the IMF shows you that. So Deutsche Bank, that's why they've allowed Deutsche Bank, the zombie bank. Banks are zombies. They are so overlevered with so many wild bets called derivatives that have no, you can't convert it into anything. I mean, it's a mess. But, you know, really, when whoever goes first, nobody else is going to be too long after that. So I don't think it matters which one's first.
It reminds me of a Halloween protest that was outside the New Zealand Parliament on the zombie banks thing. They had a whole bunch of protesters all dressed up as zombies protesting outside Parliament. What do we want? Brains. When do we want it? Brains.
Well, unfortunately, Japan was the one that ushered that in, being, you know, keeping rates so low for so long, and that's a disease that has spread. And it's not just the zombie banks, it's also many zombie corporations. We could talk 2 hours about that one, too. I mean, there's just so many things. Take your pick.
Speaking of so many things, there's still questions in the chat room. This one from Joey Raps. One question, community banks versus credit unions. What's your take?
Well, here it is. Commercial banks, so the large banks, go to the central bank window to get their cash, and then they distribute it to the community banks, the credit unions, and everybody else. So during the crisis in 2008, who was not too big to fail? Right? The ones at the top of the heap, the commercial banks, the JP Morgans, they were too big to fail. So, you know, and money held inside of the system anywhere is going to be bailed in. They made sure of that after 2010. Not that it had happened before that. The Bank of Canada actually does an annual survey on governments and central banks, collapses, how that impacts depositors, etc. It's really an interesting study that they do every year. Mm. But yeah, it doesn't matter. If your money's held in the system, I don't know that. I don't think any place is really safe. It's going to be bailed in because, you know, yeah, the little guys haven't done the derivatives, but the big guys have, so it doesn't matter. It's a disease. It goes right through the system.
Got a question in here from Shane Lackey. He says, can you explain how fiat is a direct tax?
Well, it's the inflation tax, right? And that's an invisible tax that governments don't have to go through legislation to enact. So it's about regulating that fiat money, the value, the purchasing power value. But again, it goes back to who gets it first. Going back to that spoke, you've got the central banks, then you've got the corporations, then you've got the governments, and you and I, we're on the end of it. So by the time it starts to lose value, the second that it's created, right, that's the invisible inflation tax, and that's how it is. That's how it's a tax on it. But the longer you hold it, the less value that it has, even though you don't realize it because of that nominal confusion. Hey, I still got that $20. Yeah, but it doesn't buy you what it did when you first got it. So that's how it's the inflation tax. And in that, they don't have to go to legislation to make visible.
Yeah, yeah. So that's genius. Basically all she wrote for the show today. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you very much for Lynette, my wonderful guest. Thank you so much for giving us all this of your valuable time.
It's my pleasure. It was a lot of fun.
I get that a lot.
I like you.
Yeah, well, and that was another thing as well, is that your character is also a form of currency. I can't describe to you, ladies and gentlemen, the amount of things that I've gotten either for less than the marked price or for absolutely free because I'm Vinnie Eastwood. All right. That's the value of doing good for others, or being seen to go do good for others, because that's the thing. A lot of people might do a whole lots of nice things for other people, but nobody else knows that they did that. So when you go to those other people and you ask for help, you know, like if you're really desperate, if you're in a bad situation or something like that, they don't know what you've done for others. And that's part of the reason why most of these conversations and things like that with activists and important thinkers from around the world is that I'm being seen to do it. Okay. And that's probably the only difference between me and a lot of other activists who still have to do jobs. You know, people still have to do jobs and things like that. This is my job because I didn't have a choice. I had panic attacks when I was going to new things. Because let me just back up just a second here, and I want to explain something, Lynette. You might be able to relate to this, you might not be able to. But I got busted for selling weed when I was like 19, only just turned 19, then I got busted for cannabis. I was going to go to jail for up to 8 years for possession of 13 grams for a first offense, no diversion, right? And that severely traumatized me, and I had panic attacks and things like that. And after I then went into the workforce and stuff like that, I became really, really good at it, became a great telesalesman, telemarketer, so to speak. You know, those people who call you up when you're annoying. I was really, really good at that, and about had a 50% strike rate for every second person that picked up the phone. I would sell them on it. The average strike rate for our division was 1 in 17. Okay, so I'd make 2 calls, make 1 sale. Somebody else would make 17 calls, make 1 sale. Top of the board, 6 months solid. Then they promoted me and they made me a business account manager. I wrote a 7-page essay about what was wrong with the company because I was now able to go around every single floor of this telecommunications thing. You know what they did? They fired me. Okay, and so hey, Vinny, here's 6 weeks' pay to leave. And I was like, well, I haven't had a summer holiday in a long time. Let's go. You know, and it wasn't long afterwards that I realized that I can't actually work anymore. And panic attack going to a job interview. So I was like, okay, panic attacks when I'm dealing with the government, panic attacks when I'm dealing with private corporations. What do I do for a living? You know, can't do private sector, can't do public sector. And basically this was the answer, ladies and gentlemen. I had absolutely no other choice in a very physical way. Because my body stopped me from doing what was wrong, and I can only live and I can only sleep if I do what is right every day. And I want to thank everybody in this world, Lynette included, who does this, who learned that lesson and didn't ignore it, didn't keep working in the same job for no good reason. A sacrifice must be made sometimes in the hero's journey before he can save the world. And we're not trying to save the world, ladies and gentlemen, all right? And one person cannot do that, but they can contribute. And that's all that this show is here to do, ladies and gentlemen, to contribute in the global malaise of scumbaggery. So thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to the show today. And thank you, Lynette, again for joining us. That website is itmtrading.com. And hopefully you can go and get some gold off them, get some advice and that kind of thing, because anybody who's been listening to the show for the nearly 3 hours of runtime that we've had today, it's been absolutely spectacular. And for the people who say, Vinny, stop talking in the chat room, big middle finger. You little rude bastards. But in either case, thank you very much. How many times do I have to say thank you? Enough. But please go to the VinnyEastwoodShow.com and make a donation today, ladies and gentlemen. And if you can't do the Kiwi Bank or the PayPal, Patreon.com/VinnyEastwood is the place to go. Thank you very much. Thank you, Lynette. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you again sometime.